Friends, it's a real honor and privilege to be with you this evening. Not just an honor, a real pleasure to be able to sit next to and re-engage with a beloved old friend, Joel Edwards, whom I've known and admired for so many years. And of course, more than that, more than the pleasure and privilege, is the sense of moment at how far we have moved in this past half century. Jews and Christians had been estranged for almost 2,000 years, and today they meet in friendship and mutual respect. And how beautiful also that we have with us this evening distinguished representatives of the Muslim, Hindu, and Sikh communities, and that is wonderful, and this really is our tolerant society. Friends, you asked me to speak a little about tolerance, so let me begin with a Jewish example. You know that in the middle of our synagogue services, we have what we call the reading of the Torah, the reading from a scroll of a section of the Pentateuch, and some rabbis rule that when this is to be read, you stand, and others rule that when it's read, you sit. A stranger came to a new community one year in America and went to the local synagogue that Sabbath. And it was wonderful. Everyone was welcoming and the praying was wonderful. Until it came to this bit in the middle of reading the Torah, reading the scrolls. And to his amazement and horror, half the congregation stood, half the congregation sat. And they started yelling and screaming at one another. The people who were standing were saying, ignoramus is, don't you know, when the Torah is being read, you have to stand. And the people who were sitting were saying to the ones who were standing, heretics, don't you know, when the Torah scroll is being read, you have to sit. And this crazy pandemonium carries on. The reading comes to an end. Peace reigns and etc. The same thing happens the next week and the week after. And finally, the stranger cannot stand it any longer. The town is currently without a rabbi, so he travels to the nearest town where there is a rabbi, a distinguished rabbinical scholar. He is ushered into his presence, an old, wise, gray-bearded scholar surrounded by a room full of books. And he says, Rabbi, I have a question for you. Tell me, when the Torah scroll is being read, do you stand? And the sage stroked his beard and shook his head and said, no, that is not the tradition. So he said, well, tell me, Rabbi, in that case, when the Torah scroll is being read, do you sit? And the sage shook his head and said, no, that is not the tradition. And the man said, Rabbi, you've got to help me here, because in my synagogue, half of them stand and half of them sit, and they all shout out nasty names to one another. And the rabbi nodded his head and said, yeah, that is the tradition. That is the tradition, friends, that you and I have to break. And I'm going to start with a personal recollection, a surprising one. And here it is. There's much talk these days about faith schools. I went to faith schools. The interesting thing is they weren't Jewish schools. They were St. Mary's Church of England Primary School, Christ College Finchley, unusual items on a chief rabbi's curriculum vitae. And what I want to tell you this evening is what I experienced in those two schools. Not once, in all the years did I experience a single anti-Semitic incident, hear a single anti-Semitic word, not from the masters, not from our fellow pupils. On the contrary, we the Jewish boys were treated with the utmost kindness and respect. And I suddenly understood why. I suddenly realized, but because their Christian faith mattered so much to the masters of the school, they could understand how our very different faith mattered to us. And then I understood what tolerance means in a Christian school. And that has affected my life ever since. I got more tolerance in that Christian school than I suspect I might have had had I gone to a secular school where no faith was taken seriously at all. And that was when I discovered religiously based tolerance, the religious roots, the foundations of tolerance. And many years later, when I read some Oxford philosophers, I came across the writing of a great Oxford political philosopher called John Plamonats, who made an important point, and one that is very rarely mentioned And that is, he asked the question, when was tolerance born? It was called toleration, or it was actually called liberty of conscience. Liberty of conscience was born in Britain in the 17th century, John Locke. And he points out that the time, the age at which tolerance was first formulated was an age of very strong religious beliefs. Indeed, it was an age, had been an age of wars of religion. And listen to the words he uses in his book, Man and Society. He writes, liberty of conscience was born, not of indifference, not of skepticism, not of mere open-mindedness, but of faith. And I suddenly realized that that was where my very tiny experience in a school and the greatness of British political thinkers converged on the idea that tolerance has and must have religious foundations. And now I therefore come to the bad news. I believe we have lost, or maybe we are in the process of losing, those great traditions of tolerance. That's why I've just published a new book called The Home We Build Together, which is an extended, sustained plea for tolerance. And again, I want to give you some personal recollections. My doctoral supervisor at university, the late Sir Bernard Williams, was at the time described as the most brilliant mind in Britain, and I think he was. And he was a convinced and principled atheist, a lapsed Catholic. And I was, in those days, very religious. My beard was a lot bigger than it is now. It was also a lot blacker, you know. When I became chief rabbi, you know, 17 years ago, people said to me, aren't you a little young for the job? And I said, don't worry, in this job I will age rapidly. And you know, in all our many encounters, not once did Sir Bernard challenge or criticize or even question my faith. And I learned so much from that. I learned what it means to respect those with whom you disagree, and I learned even more importantly what it means to put prejudices aside and engage in the shared pursuit of truth. Then there was that wonderful man, one of the great sages of the second half of the 20th century, whom I came to know as a beloved and cherished friend, the late Sir Isaiah Berlin. I came to know Isaiah in the last years of his life, and in our first conversation he said to me, Chief Rabbi, whatever you do, don't talk to me about religion. When it comes to God, I'm tone deaf. And then he said to me, what I don't understand about you is you studied philosophy at Oxford and Cambridge, and how come you believe? And I said, Isaiah, if it helps, think of me as a lapsed heretic. Quite understand, dear boy, he said. Now, in 1997, I published a book called The Politics of Hope, and I touched on certain themes on which Isaiah Berlin had written, and I wanted to know what he thought of the book, and he asked me to send it to him, and he said he would get back to me, and I waited several months, and I had no reply. So I phoned him up, Headington House, just outside Oxford, and his wife, Lady Aline, answered the phone. This is towards the end of 97. And she said, oh, Chief Rabbi, we've just been talking about you. Now, I don't imagine rabbis were the normal subject of conversation in the Berlin household. So I said, in what context? And she said, Isaiah has just asked you to officiate at his funeral. I said, please, Lady Aline, don't think in such terms. But Isaiah knew, and 4 days later, he died, and I officiated at his funeral and at his memorial service in the Hampstead Synagogue. And Michael Ignatieff, his biographer, was fascinated by this because he knew Isaiah was a secular Jew, and he wondered why he wanted a chief rabbi officiating at his funeral. And I said to him, Isaiah may not have been a believing Jew, but he was a loyal Jew. And that is no small thing. And Isaiah wrote in a book that's just been republished a couple of months ago called Conversations with Isaiah Berlin, in which Isaiah Berlin says, I am not religious, but I place high value on the religious experience of believers. I think that those who do not understand what it is to be religious do not understand what human beings live by. And that was Isaiah. Now compare the late Sir Bernard Williams and Isaiah Berlin with today's atheists, who are, as Tokes Ibokwe did so politely, I kind of missed that aggro there, but otherwise it was absolutely brilliant. But have you read today's atheists? I suppose you have, really. I think it's 6-0 to the atheists at halftime, so we need religion to score. But what I notice is the incivility of today's atheists, the substitution of anger for argument, the misrepresentation of religious belief, the willful misinterpretation of religious texts, and whose practitioners seem to me to be the intellectual equivalents of road rage. And when you write a really angry book against religion, it becomes a bestseller. And that is only one tiny example of the new intolerance, the new incivility. Just 20 years ago, Berlin, Williams would never have done such a thing. And we are witnessing the death of respect, and you see it everywhere, from road rage itself to football hooliganism to street crime, to the fact, I find almost unbelievable, of the number of teachers who get assaulted by pupils or nurses, by patients. This is an age in which people speak without listening, condemn without understanding. And even the media sometimes seem unable to understand anything more complicated than a soundbite. And this new intolerance is threatening Christian societies on campus. People who wear crucifixes and happen to work at airports. There are bans on public displays of Christian symbols, and sometimes even Christmas itself is the festival that dare not speak its name. How did this happen? We were supposed to be so tolerant, so open-minded, so accepting of diversity. How come we are measurably a less tolerant society than we were 20 years ago? And the answer is this. So long as people had and believed in a shared moral code, then they could, in Isaiah's words, I mean Prophet Isaiah, not Oxford Isaiah, they could reason together. But once you begin to believe in moral relativity, that morality is no more than that each one of us chooses it to be, then we can't reason together. I have my view, you have yours, and none of us has any cogent reason for our choice. What then happens when two views clash? The answer is, the loudest or the angriest voice wins. If I can't refute you, then I can ridicule you. I can intimidate you. And even, if need be, ban you. And that is how the old tolerance, which made Britain so special and so beloved to all of us, has mutated into the new intolerance. Or as I call it in my book, in one of the chapters, the death of freedom in the name of freedom. And that is why I believe that all of us, Jews, Christians, Muslims, Hindus, and Sikhs, must work together to recreate a tolerant society on the religious base. The tolerance was born in this country 3.5 centuries ago. We have to show, as God showed Elijah, that God is not in the whirlwind or the earthquake or the fire, but the still small voice. We have to show that for us, every single human being is in the image and likeness of God. The rabbis 2,000 years ago said about that phrase in Genesis, when a human being mints many coins in the same mold, they all come out exactly alike. God makes all of us in the same image, his image, and we all come out different. To teach us to respect difference. What I call in another book, the dignity of difference. Because what Genesis tells us is that one who is not in my image, not my color, my culture, my creed, is still in God's image. And no secular doctrine has that power. Let us show as people of faith, the sheer power of civility and respect and forgiveness and reconciliation and, yes, the power of love. They, and not moral relativism, are the true foundations of a tolerant society. Friends, I end with another story, very similar to the one with which I began, but this time from a Jewish source. When I was a student, I went to America and there met one of the most famous rabbis in the world, one of the most famous rabbis of the 20th century. A wonderful man, revered as a guru and a saint by millions. And I asked him as a student this question. I said, I'm worried about becoming too religious, because if I get too religious, I might lose my ability to relate to people who are not of my religion or cultures that are not mine. And he said to me, the reverse is true. And he told me this story, which I enjoy retelling. He said, imagine two people are paid. Their work is to schlep. You know what schlep means? No, carry heavy weights, you know. They just carry whatever. Before FedEx, they carried weight. Okay. So one was employed to carry sacks full of building rubble, and the other was employed to carry bags of diamonds. And he says, supposing you give each of these people a bag to carry full of emeralds. He said, the person whose job it is to carry sacks of building rubble thinks, another sack, another heavy weight to carry. The one who carried diamonds knows that certain stones are precious. When you give him a bag of emeralds, he notices instantly those stones are precious. They're not diamonds, but they're precious. He said, so it is with faith. If for you, faith is just a heavy weight that you have to carry, because you don't appreciate yours, you won't appreciate anyone else's. But if for you, faith is full of diamonds, then you will understand that somebody else's faith is emeralds. May not be the same as yours, but they're also precious. And then he looked at me, this very great man, and said, the more you value your faith, the more you will value other people's faith likewise. So I believe that for sake of the future of tolerance, for the future of Britain, and for the future of God, whose children we all are, let us have many more evenings like this, many more friendships across faith, and let us show that tolerance is indeed the will of God. Thank you indeed.